This podcast is part of the Acast Creator Network.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Wow.
Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas, big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Hello and welcome to The Stand with Eamon Dunphy. Now, crime in Ireland is based on the drug trade. Largely, and indeed it is a vicious and nihilistic business. I think it's etched on most people's minds in recent times due to the Regency Hotel incident where at a boxing weigh-in, one man was murdered, but it began a feud that is now known as the Hutch Kinahan feud, but it was, and that has been a deadly feud. Many, many people murdered, 18, I think, but my next guest will tell us precisely how many. But there was an attempt to, that raid was conducted. It is alleged by the Hutch faction, and it was designed to kill Daniel Kinahan, the son of Christy Kinahan, who is, if, as it were, the godfather of the Kinahan group, now retired, we believe, but, his son is running an operation, and Jerry Hutch, known popularly as the Monk, is alleged to have been behind the killing of a man called David Byrne, who was a very close lieutenant of Daniel Kinahan. But before the Hutch-Kinahan feud, long before indeed, the 2016 raid on the boxing weigh-in at the Regency Hotel, there was another feud. And they're not unrelated in many ways, but there was a feud between gangsters, career criminals really, in Crumlin and Drimna. It was the Crumlin-Drimna feud. It was every bit as bloody. I think around 16 people were murdered in that particular feud. And last Sunday for her newspaper, Nicola Tallant, investigations editor of the Sunday World, wrote a brilliant 8-page pull-out special about one of the leading figures in the criminal underworld, Freddie Thompson, known as Fat Freddie Thompson, although I've never noticed much fat on him. But he is a career criminal, and he is now serving a life sentence for a murder, which we will come to, the murder of Dahi Douglas in 2018. He was given a life sentence for that, the mandatory life sentence. But this piece that Nicola Tallant wrote for the Sunday World is quite brilliant. Journalism is difficult and done really well. It's extremely difficult. There are a lot of dots in this particular story of Irish crime to be joined, and Nicola Tallant does all of that. I should say that she's a regular contributor, of course, to The Stand. She has her own podcast, The Crime World. And one of her most brilliant achievements as a journalist was to tell the story of Joey O'Callaghan in a 10-part podcast and in a book. The podcast is called The Witness in His Own Words. It's just passed its 2 millionth stream. It's been internationally acclaimed, and two important members of The Stand, not me, were involved with Nicola in producing this, Jane Gogan and Ian Malini. It's a brilliant piece of work. As I say, it's been internationally acclaimed, and it's a pleasure now to welcome Nicola to The Stand again. Nicola, congratulations on the success of Joey O'Callaghan's story. It's a classic story about how this underworld works, how these career criminals work, how they can corrupt innocent people. And it has rightly been acclaimed, because although we think of this underworld as something out there, under, it isn't. It's part of the life and everyday experience of so many people in generally communities that are working class and less advantaged, but where most of the people are decent, getting on with their lives and having nothing to do with these people. It's fair to say, isn't it, Nicola, that the Crumlin-Drimnagh feud and the way you've set out the story of Freddie Thompson is very much a world where people are decent and get on with their lives as best as they can. At the same time, running alongside this are career gangsters who are vicious, nihilistic and greedy.
Most definitely. And I think probably, you know, what makes us sit up and take notice is when we can focus on an individual and you can tell the story of an individual and knit in what's going on around them, instead of talking in broad terms about gangland, which is really usually what we have to do, you know.
Yes.
We don't hear who these people are. We don't hear much about these victims. We don't really hear much about these criminals and about what molded them, what made them, and, you know, about the intricacies of exactly what they did. Thompson stands out as, you know, a very significant figure that sort of meandered his way through a childhood in the South Inner City.
Yes, you point out he was born in December 1980 into a working class South Inner City family in a place called Maryland, and his family were street traders.
Yeah, his mother was, reared them really on her own because the father left the home, but he was a tough kind of street bully from very early on, and the mother would have always given him backing. That was kind of noted. He was, you know, he was a kid who was selling newspapers at one point on the corner of Clanbrassil Street, and he turned into a murder machine within Ireland's underworld. And, you know, I suppose to work out how that happened, you have to follow his career and, you know, follow his childhood from the South Inner City out towards his teenage years in Crumlin, where his cousins settled down and where a young gang of a young kind of organized crime gang are created within that area. They're a young group who look up to the elder criminals. You know, Crumlin would have had big names between, you know, Martin the General Cahill living down around the Rathmines area. You had Martin Foley. You had an awful lot of kind of big name celebrity criminals, and these young guys looked up to them.
They also looked up very much to John Gilligan, the man responsible for the murder of our colleague Veronica Guerin. And that was a pivotal moment, wasn't it? When Veronica was murdered, it was the end of Gilligan and his gang. Mm. And they left, as you point out in your piece on Sunday, they left a gap in the underworld when they took him away.
Yeah, again, I suppose we talk about these vacuums. What is a vacuum? And that's exactly what is explained here. John Gilligan had his cannabis operation up and running. He was looking for young, eager guys on the streets to sell for him. And in the Crumlin-Drimnagh area, in this large group, which included Freddie Thompson and included his cousins, Liam and David Byrne. David Byrne, who would go on to be murdered in the Regency Hotel.
Yes.
They were all there, ready and willing. You know, they were 15, 14, 15, 16 years of age, and Gilligan, they were flogging Gilligan's wares on the streets for him. He saw within two members, certainly Declan Gavin and Brian Rattigan, who would have been above Freddie in the pecking order at that stage. He saw them like as really vital and important to, and actually allowed them go as 16-year-olds to Amsterdam to meet his business partners who were supplying him, wholesaling him. So, when Veronica Guerin was murdered, literally within months, the Gilligan gang was dismantled. He was taken off the streets and there was this big void left.
Yes.
So what you had was this young gang. You had Rattigan and Gavin at the top of it, who had already got experience of actually having international partners. And they just mopped up what Gilligan left behind and much more besides. But there was an underlying bitterness between the two of them. They were probably, well, what I described as both alpha males. They both wanted to be in charge. And while there was, they didn't really like one another, they were making a lot of money by working together. And that held them sort of as a group until there was a big, big drug bust in the Holiday Inn Hotel in 2000. Three main members of the gang, Graham the Wig Whelan, Philip Griffiths and Declan Gavin, were there. But Gavin had gone for a lie down at just when the cops burst in. So Whelan and Griffiths were wheeled off to would subsequently get sentences to serve time for that. There was 1.6 million euro worth of coke at the time, and they were all just, you know, teenagers. They were going to share the spoils of that. But that, those circumstances surrounding that raid, you go, you know, again, you hear about fallouts, you hear about accusations of touting. Exactly that happened here because Gavin was having a lie down. He wasn't in the same room as the coke. He walked free. He got off, and the other two were brought before the court. So there isn't really any room in that world for coincidences, for good luck. Everything is blamed on touting. You know, there's a lot of paranoia. And Rattigan accused Gavin of, you know, tipping off the cops. Gavin claimed total innocence and counter-accused Rattigan of tipping off the cops in order to have him, you know, taken down. And what was kind of rivalry turned into out-and-out warfare, and 10 years of it.
Yes, and in that sort of milieu at that moment, Freddie Thompson was a coming man. But what's really shocking to just consider is these were teenagers when Gilligan was sent to jail and that gap, that vacuum was left. What were the people who were stepping into it were kids, what we'd call kids. Mm. But that's a kind of misunderstanding, isn't it? These are deadly youngsters. This is what is happening in communities afflicted by this kind of criminality, isn't it? And it's happened in the North Inner City, which is an area I know. And here it was happening in Crumlin, in Drimna. And it led, I know, this incident you've described in the Holiday Inn led to this terrible feud. But the ages of them and the fact that they come from and are living alongside others who are interested in football, their job, you know, going down and having a few pints and stuff like that. These people are career criminals, aren't they? Because in your piece, you go into the relationships between the families. They're intermarried, interrelated. They're a different class within a class.
There are a lot of them, and, you know, a lot of them are second, sometimes third generation, you know, criminals are running through. So it's kind of nearly the family business has been handed down to them. So, yes, they're missing a lot of things. They're missing that sort of structure, that parental guidance that would be teaching them what's right and what's wrong. They're missing, you know, they're entering into this criminal world. They're believing themselves to be men when they're just underdeveloped teenagers. And I mean that from a mental capacity, their brains aren't developed fully. You know, I think they say that you've got this ability to make very rash decisions until you're 23, 24. There's some age that your brain hasn't properly. In my case, still going on, but, and yours, by the way. But, look, you know, there's a lot of structures, social structures missing for these guys. And then we have a situation where they're becoming, you know, they're going from street dealers to millionaires within a very short space of time. Money brings with it that sense of power. And, you know, all reality as we know it is gone very early for them. And they are living this urban warfare. And it's full of ego, you know, full of probably ultimately, you know, lack of confidence and all those other things that are we all experience in normal life. But they, you know, they go to war. There's no logic in it. They they have this insatiable bloodlust. And sometimes when things happen, there's no way of going back. I mean, at the beginning of the Crumlin-Drimna feud, one of the first significant things that happened was in August of 2001, when Declan Gavin had been out for a night and was in an abracadabra takeaway. Brian Rattigan, his arch rival, was at a family gathering to celebrate the birthday of his 18-year-old younger brother, and heard Gavin was up at the takeaway, went up and stabbed him to death. Now, he was initially convicted of murder. That was later overturned, and in recent years he accepted a plea of guilty on manslaughter in relation to that crime. But in retaliation for that, what you had was attacks on Rattigan himself. He was then jailed, and Thompson's side, because Thompson took over after Declan Gavin's murder. Thompson Yes. stepped into the leadership role of that side. What you had was this new class of gangland warfare, where Thompson moves in on Rattigan's younger brother, Joey. Yes. His beloved little brother, and he's shot dead in 2002 after he set up. And really there you have a situation where this is crossed a line in the sand, even for gangland. And it's an eye for an eye, a brother for a brother, and a fight to the death. In total, I think it's same as the Kinahan Hutch feud, although it happened in a quicker space of time. Over the course of a sort of a decade, the Crumlin-Drimna feud, 18 people, some say 20, lost their lives. Some of the killings are related, but, you know, they're related around the feud. But you can obviously identify exact tit-for-tat killings, but some of them happen due to the tensions and paranoia that exist within this different sides. And sometimes the different sides will turn on their own because of paranoia.
Yes, and I mean, one of the features of the Hutch Kinahan, or the Kinahan Hutch feud, after the Regency Hotel murder of David Byrne, who was a Kinahan lieutenant, was the savagery with which the Kinahan faction turned on innocent members of the Hutch family. This would have mirrored, wouldn't it, what happened in the Crumlin Drimna feud?
Yeah, and not only did it mirror it, but by that point, you have, these Freddie Thompson, his cousins, the Burns, and others that had been involved in the Crumlin-Drimna feud have Yes. merged with the Kinahan Mafia. They are part and parcel of it. They are, you know, there. So they have been as such blooded by the Crumlin-Drimna feud, which really only kind of sort of petered out around 2010 and will never fully go away. The bitterness and rivalries will be there forever. But you had these individuals who as teenagers fought that kind of gangland war, going in as soldiers as such in the Kinahan Hutch feud, well-versed soldiers. They knew, you know, in some ways they were ahead of the game. They knew how to identify targets. They had used hitmen, enforcers, etc. before. They knew how to set up cell structures, murder cells, etc. So all of these things, as I say, are a line in the sand. I mean, there was a time in gangland and within my lifetime and yours where there would have been elders, mentors, where there would have been within the world, there would have been respect to an extent that you didn't bring your troubles or your business to another man's family home.
Yes.
All disputes happened, you know, or were, you know, were hammered out in kind of neutral locations. You know, you didn't look at going for innocent relatives, loved ones, Yes. etc. And things were settled without bullets.
Yeah, and I have a friend, someone who's close to this world in the north, in the city, who told me that as a result of the Kinahan Hutch feud, the north inner city will never be the same again, because neighbour can't trust neighbour, because this is really the same tribe split into two, and people have jumped sides. Nobody trusts anybody, and it will last for generations.
We see the same at the same. You have to say at the same time that, like, certainly the Kinahan organization pumped money into the feud, and they were paying anybody who would take money. And you see in a lot of cases of where people have been brought before the courts, arrested, suspected of turning on their neighbours, the Hutch family, they are people with addiction issues. They are people with debts to pay back. They are, you know, people, I'm sure in many cases, I can think of a few, I'm not even going to name anybody, but I'm sure their own families are horrified, absolutely horrified and disgusted that they would have taken money to give information on people that had been lived in the neighbourhood for generations. But that's what addiction does. That's what drug debts do. And, you know, money is power in that world. And we've seen many people, and I've spoken to you about it, that have gone through the courts, members of these murder teams, guys who are going into jail for life now because they took a payday. And a lot of them are, if you look at their backgrounds, they either have learning difficulties, they have addiction problems, low IQ, or they may, you know, come from homes where they weren't cared for as kids. I'm not bleeding heart for them all. Some of them, I can tell you, only want the money for a new pair of runners and don't care what they have to do for it, even if it's to end a human life. But many of them, you know, are, I suppose, vulnerable in some way to these gangs who are just, you know, moving in on people like that and using them.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Yeah, now let's look at Freddie Thompson, his rise. He liked to go to Spain. He was feared. You described him earlier in our conversation and in the piece you wrote for your newspaper, The Sunday World, as a murder machine. He was a feared and respected man. One of the arrival points, if you like, for Freddie Thompson was the funeral of David Byrne, who he was related to. He was given the honour of being one of the chief mourners, which was, in terms of status, and you point this out in your piece, this was a confirmation of his status in the Kinahan, as part of the Kinahan cartel, And that was a big moment. It meant a lot. And we all, I think, who look at these things, remember that funeral and the elaborate, the stretch limos, the horse with the carriage and all of that. This was real kind of mafia stuff.
Yeah, and it was a moment for Freddie because he hadn't really been quite accepted. He tried very hard to be accepted into the inner circle of the Kinahan organization. He'd worked very hard. In actual fact, previous to that funeral, he had been involved, I suspected at least he was involved in setting up his own best friend to be killed because Paddy Doyle had angered the upper echelons of the Kinahan organization.
Yeah, you described that vividly. It's a horrendous thing to do to your best friend. It's extraordinary. And that I urge people to read Nicola's stuff and to get a hold of this if you can.
I've actually done it in two parts on the podcast as well, Eamon. I don't know whether you heard that. I kind of did a long read on it.
So it's on your podcast, Crime World.
I think part two should have gone out this morning.
Right. It's really, really, really detailed. And it doesn't just give you numbers and incidents. It gives you the feeling that you're there. And that is, it's an eye-opener, but it's a shocking eye-opener.
Yeah, I mean, I suppose I know all this material, but when you put it down sometimes and you put it together and you put it you construct it in a proper narrative, it can even horrify me when I look at it. When I sat back really and looked at Freddie Thompson and the amount of murders he has been linked to, is involved in, his reputation on the streets, how he is a very strange character because while he's as cold as all that, family comes first with him, you know what I mean? And he has had this very intense relationship. He would do anything for his family. He's very close to his mother. All these things you don't quite expect from a killer, you know? And he eventually made a mistake because actually that's what is always there's this phrase that you hear sometimes cops and investigators use that they have to be lucky all the time. We only have to be lucky once, they say. And it is so true because while Freddie was very lucky in his career along the way, he got away with a lot. He did eventually make a mistake, and that was when he decided to target David Doughty Douglas in the summer of 2017 for murder. And Douglas was somebody who, in 2016 for murder, Douglas was somebody who had previously been identified by the Kinahan Mafia as one of two men seen in a car outside the Red Cow Inn when there was a boxing event going on. Now, that was an incident that happened prior to the Regency. Somebody spotted two guys in a car and everybody fled. And Douglas was identified by the Mafia, by the way, by nobody else, as one of those men. And a guy called Darren Kearns was identified as the second. Now, Kearns was shot dead. Douglas had been shot but survived. And Douglas went to the Kinahan crew and pleaded his innocence. He even was confident enough. He had come up with a alibi for the night in question. He was confident that he had been totally exonerated and was back to kind of normal. His wife had a shop on Bridgefoot Street, right within Freddie Thompson territory in Dublin 8. And he'd drop in and out there. And this particular day in the summer, he was outside chatting to a creche owner who had the business beside him. He went back into the shop and there was a noise of gunfire and a hitman fled. But
it was a very elaborate operation that was orchestrated. This went to the Special Criminal Court, which after watching that RTÉ series, including the Kerry Babies and the Silence Train robbery, I have to say, Nicola, there's no evidence whatsoever that the guards are corrupt now and the Special Criminal Court is anything other than. But what that series showed surely is if you set up the means by which corrupt convictions can be achieved, they will be eventually. But that's for another day. Just want to put that in because some of the things that the guards and the judges got up to and the lawyers, anyway, never mind.
I think we're, you know, and we need to say that it is another era now. This is decades later. I'd like to think things are more accountable. Any evidence I've heard in the Special Criminal Court is very technical these days. There's a lot of, you know, availability of CCTV, of phone tracking, and of, you know, evidence that isn't taken from the word of an individual.
They're not confessions.
No, they're not confessions. You know, in actual fact, I don't think I've ever sat in a court where a confession was what has, nobody confesses. They all deny, and that's why we have trials. But most of the evidence that we hear nowadays within the Special Criminal Court is collated, intelligence and technical evidence that can trace. And in the case of Freddie Thompson, it was technical evidence like CCTV. And phones that the guards were able to, over months and months, follow his route in the run up to Douglas's murder, which essentially was like a hunter stalking his prey. He was circling him, and he was circling the city, and there was a number of cars being used by the murder cell, with the murder team. Freddie was seen breaking up a mobile phone SIM card just around the time of the shooting up at a stall around Mead Street. It was very, very technical, the evidence in the case against Thompson, and it resulted in a guilty verdict, and he has he's since been sent to prison for life.
Yes, it's a mandatory life sentence. Just in conclusion, Nicola, we wonder, I'm sure people wonder now, about the future of this country. You know, you talked about that raid in the Holiday Inn in 2001, August 2001. We've seen the era of Gilligan pass, and now we think, the end of the Kinahan cartel, if they ever appear in Ireland again. But for the future, is there a line of succession that after Ratigan and after Freddie, the lads are out there, maybe acting now as couriers and whatever, but they'll step into the shoes? Or have the police got the resources to deal with this kind of crime? And the other issue, of course, is while the market is there, and it's a middle class market as well as for working class people, as long as the people want coke in particular, then there'll be always people to supply it.
There will. Look, there's a finite number of Freddie Thompsons. Not everybody working in that world are as sociopathic as him. There are certainly some, and we can identify people younger who have been and gone since his start of his career as well, you know, that we've spoken about, and who are coming up the ranks, who are identified as particularly, you know, chaotic, violent, fearless individuals who
and
are going
used,
to...
They use their own stuff, which was something the old-style criminals never did either.
Yeah, some of the old-style criminals did. Larry Dunn was using his own stuff. That's what got him caught.
Yeah.
I think they probably, look, they probably all...
Well, the Monk and Christy Kinahan, for example, Christy Kinahan Sr., seem to me to have not been users, but you'd know more than me.
Well, Christy Kinahan Sr. told a court in Ireland in the 1990s that he was a heroin addict and needed help to come off the drugs, and also that promised that if he got a free education course at the taxpayer, that he would, and that's exactly what he did.
He got
educated for his future business by the Irish Prison Service, by the taxpayer. Now, look, you have to just accept that we have things like that in place for rehabilitation of most. And these people who we end up talking about are the outsiders. They're the ones that you can't govern for them, because then good people would miss out, you know.
Of course.
So,
okay, Nicola, we're really grateful to you for joining us on the stand. Just say to our listeners, if you want to hear more about Freddie Thompson in particular, Nicola has on her Crime World podcast narrated the piece you wrote last Sunday, which is an absolutely brilliant piece of journalism. really, really is. Just because it's not in a broadsheet newspaper doesn't mean it isn't a classic piece of journalism. And we're very grateful to Nicola Tallant, Investigations Editor for the Sunday World, for joining us on the stand. Thanks to Nicola. Thanks to all of you for listening. That's all we have time for now. We'll talk to you soon.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.